Hi there, welcome to Bond Investment Mentor. I'm your host, Chris Nelson, and this is a podcast dedicated to helping community financial institutions master the art of fixed income investments. If you're working for a community bank or credit union and you have responsibilities for the investment portfolio, you've come to the right place. I'll be your personal investment guide as we help you boost your fixed income investment knowledge, level up your portfolio management skills, and help you gain the know-how you need to help your institution achieve its financial goals. In this episode, we're going to take a look at the Bloomberg Yield Tables. They're an important tool for analyzing and evaluating mortgage securities, but it's important to understand what the screens contain and how to quickly find the information to make investment decisions. We're going to review the yield tables, and I'm going to share a free resource that will help you navigate them. Ready to go exploring? Then let's get started. Hi there, welcome to another episode of Bond Investment Mentor. I'm glad you're here. Today, I'm going to review the Bloomberg Yield Tables for mortgage-backed securities. The Yield Tables are a great tool with a lot of really useful information, but you need to know what information the Yield Tables contain and how to locate it. And that's what we're going to do together today. I also want to share a free guide that I've created to help you navigate the yield tables and help you with your investment decision making. In addition, we'll review the most recent Capitol Hill testimony from Fed Chair Jerome Powell and check the bond markets as we wrap up the month of June. Plus, I have a couple of resources that I want to tell you about to help you know when the bond market is closed for the holidays. So first off, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell was on Capitol Hill last week. He appeared before the Senate Banking and House Financial Services Committees for one of his twice-a-year Humphrey Hawkins testimonies. With the Fed making its most aggressive move with interest rates in almost 30 years earlier this month, and inflation at 40-year highs, this appearance garnered a lot of attention during both days of the hearings. During his testimony on both of those days, Powell reiterated the Federal Reserve's commitment to battling inflation, noting that external events like the Ukraine-Russia conflict and supply-related pressures have made it more difficult to do so. He also acknowledged that the Fed's tighter monetary policy could lead to a recession, but he stressed that such a scenario was not their intent. As you might expect, Powell met with criticism and concerns from both committees and from members of both sides of the political aisle. Some were worried that higher interest rates would result in a stagflationary environment with ongoing inflationary pressures and higher unemployment as a result of the Fed's actions. Powell responded that his larger concern was the risk of entrenched inflation that becomes even more difficult to address if the Fed was too accommodating with monetary policy. Other committee members raised questions as to whether the Federal Reserve had waited too long before acting to contain rising inflation. They also raised concerns about the Fed focusing so heavily on employment and inflation data, both of which are considered lagging economic indicators. Admittedly, it does seem that the Federal Open Market Committee is a little less forward-looking than has historically been the case. In the past, the FOMC was more focused on the economic outlook almost a year down the road. But with their efforts to play catch-up with inflation at this point, their time horizon has shortened considerably. Having watched or listened to my share of these hearings over the years, it's interesting to see how they play out based on where we are with the economy and interest rates. The reception for the Fed chair when the economy is humming along and interest rates are low is quite different from when monetary policy is being tightened and the economy is struggling. Don't get me wrong, the Humphrey Hawkins testimony is never a cakewalk, but while I wouldn't consider Powell's 2 days of hearings to be a hostile environment, they definitely weren't as friendly as they have been in the past. Since Powell's appearance last week, we've also had comments from San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly, New York Fed President John Williams, and Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester, all of whom are supportive of an additional 75 basis point rate increase in July. Looking at Fed funds futures, the current consensus is leaning toward that 75 basis point hike by the Fed at the July meeting. As I'm recording this episode, the market outlook is a 70% chance that the FOMC pulls the trigger on 75 basis points on July 27th. Beyond that, the outlook has been tempered a bit. Where we had previously seen the potential for an additional 75 basis point tightening in September, Fed funds futures are now indicating only an additional 50 basis points. And if we look further out, it becomes a little unclear, with any additional rate hikes closer to 25 basis points, if there are any moves at all. In fact, the longer-term futures contracts are starting to price in the possibility of the Fed beginning to cut interest rates sometime next year. Keep in mind that the longer-term outlook for Fed funds futures is murky at best. As I mentioned back in episode 16 when we explored Fed funds futures, the futures market has a pretty good track record when it comes to what is likely to happen at the next couple of upcoming meetings, but they're generally not as clear once you begin to focus on the longer term. It's also important to remember that what the futures market is showing you is based on the conditions today. If conditions change down the road, the Fed funds futures markets will absorb that information and adapt accordingly. In the Treasury markets, yields have pulled back over the past week as the market has started to factor in the possibility of tougher economic conditions or outright recession while the Fed continues raising rates. This includes today's latest update to the Atlanta Fed's GDP Now model, which is now forecasting another negative print for GDP in the second quarter, which would be enough for a technical recession. We won't have the first real data on Q2 GDP until the end of July, so the jury is still out on that. At the time I'm recording this, the two-year Treasury has broken below the 3% level to 2.95%, while the five-year Treasury is yielding 3.04%. The benchmark 10-year Treasury rate could end the day below 3%. It's currently at a yield of 2.99%. While we have seen improvement in the bond markets over the past couple of weeks, rates across the curve are still higher as we wrap up the month and quarter, which means that bond investors are going to be hit with another round of unrealized losses in the investment portfolio. While I discussed the implications of unrealized losses in episode 14 and what they did and didn't mean, the results for this month are still going to sting for investors at community financial institutions. If you're listening to this episode around the time that I'm recording it, here in the United States, we're heading toward the long weekend to celebrate the Independence Day holiday. One question that I'm occasionally asked is where people can find information on the U.S. bond markets and when they're closed for holidays. While many holidays are also days off for banks and credit unions, there are exceptions. On top of that, in most cases, the bond markets will have an early close before the holiday. And if you're trying to place a trade near a holiday, it's good to know what that market schedule is going to be. With that in mind, I wanted to share a couple of resources with you. The Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association, otherwise known as SIFMA, has an online calendar of the holidays when the U.S. bond market is closed and if there are any associated early closes either the day before or the Friday before if it is a Monday holiday. For example, with the upcoming Independence holiday, the SIFMA calendar shows that the markets will be closed on Monday, July 4th, but also show that the market will be closing early on Friday, July 1st at 2 p.m. Another good resource is offered by derivatives firm Chatham Financial. They have an online interactive calendar that shows the dates when the market is closed in New York and in London. You can also import the information directly to your calendar if you'd like. The other thing I like is that the calendar looks out 10 years, so if you need info about a future date for a securities or a derivative, it's available. Both the SIFMA and Chatham Financial holiday calendars are great resources if you need to know the holiday schedule for the U.S. bond markets. I'll leave links to both of these resources in the episode notes, so take a moment and check them out. All right, let's move on to our main topic for today. If you're managing the investment portfolio for your community bank or credit union, you've probably looked at your share of residential mortgage-backed securities. These are securities made up of residential mortgage loans that are pooled and securitized. If you're interested in more of an introduction to residential MBS, make sure you check out episode 5 where we got into the basics of mortgage securities. One of the tools you'll undoubtedly use and a go-to screen for brokers when they're showing mortgage securities is the Bloomberg Yield Table. The Yield Table is packed with lots of information about the structure and composition of a mortgage pool. However, with all the information it contains, it can sometimes feel overwhelming trying to figure out everything you want and need to know. And if you don't know where to look to find certain information, it can be easy to overlook important information as you evaluate a mortgage-backed security. In addition, there is a little catch with yield tables. Bloomberg has more than one version. While they have some similarities, there are also differences between them. And if you don't know about these differences, or even that these screens exist, you might end up not having a complete picture of the security that you're analyzing. Recently, I had a couple of listeners reach out asking if I could provide guidance on Bloomberg yield tables. And so here we are. Here's what we're going to cover. We'll start by exploring the items and areas that are common to all Bloomberg yield tables. Then, we'll review each of the yield table types that Bloomberg offers and their differences. That way, you'll know what you're seeing from brokers, as well as what additional yield table screens you might want to request to get a better picture of an MBS pool. I've also created a free resource to help you understand and navigate the yield tables, and I'll share more about that with you a little later. All right, let's get started. The yield table screen provides a snapshot of information about a mortgage-backed security and the underlying loans that make up the pool. In addition, it also lets you analyze multiple what-if scenarios simultaneously, which makes it easy to compare the scenarios against each other. These scenarios are based on different prepayment speeds, and they show you how the yield, the weighted average life, the duration, and the yield spread change under different circumstances. As I mentioned earlier, Bloomberg has several versions of the yield table depending on the information that you're looking for, but they all have a similar format, so let's take a look at that first. The pool and loan characteristics are going to be found at the very top of all the Bloomberg yield table screens, and there's a lot of information. How they crunch so much info into such a small space, frankly, is a brilliant use of screen real estate. So, what information is available? Well, let's start with the basic descriptive information, which includes things like the security pool number and its CUSIP number, the pool's coupon rate, and the final maturity date for the security. You'll also find information about how many loans are in the MBS pool and what percentage of the security's original principal balance is still remaining, also known as the factor. The top part of the yield table also lets you take a peek under the hood to see some of the loan level characteristics. For example, there's a section that provides you with the weighted average coupon rate, the weighted average months to maturity, and the weighted average loan age, which tells you how old or how seasoned the loans in the pool are. Other high-level information about the underlying collateral is available, including the maximum and weighted average outstanding loan sizes and the weighted average loan-to-value. The yield table also includes the top states represented in the pool, the geographic breakdown, and a breakdown by year of when the loans were originated. But wait, there's more. The Bloomberg yield tables also include snapshots of a mortgage security's prepayment history. They include prepayment speeds looking back at the 1-month, 3-month, 6-month, 12-month, and lifetime periods. In addition, you can view the past year's worth of historical 1-month prepayment speeds. All prepayment speeds on the table are shown in two ways, in PSA and in CPR. As I said, there's a lot of information available, and it will allow you to get a deeper understanding of the security and the underlying mortgage loans. Knowing that information will help you identify good and bad characteristics for managing both prepayment and extension risk. These are the key risk exposures that you want to be thinking about when evaluating mortgage-backed securities. So far, we've covered a lot of territory and data on the Bloomberg yield table, but here's the thing, we're not done yet. Now let's talk about the middle section of the yield table, where you can analyze multiple prepayment scenarios. On the left side of this section, you'll find the security's price. To the right of that are seven columns where you can enter different prepayment scenarios and compare them against each other. Want to see what happens if prepayment speeds are high? You can do that. Interested in seeing how the mortgage security looks if prepayment speeds slow down? The yield table has you covered on that as well. If we take a closer look at the information in each column or each scenario, we'll find the prepayment assumption is listed at the very top. The assumption can be based on historical or hypothetical speeds. In the middle of the column is the calculated yield for that prepayment assumption. This is important because the yield on a mortgage-backed security will vary as its prepayment speed changes. It's directly affected. Finally, at the bottom of each scenario is other information that is also affected by the prepayment speed. This includes the weighted average life of the security, its duration, and the yield spread to the treasury curve. Again, these numbers will shift as different prepayment assumptions are applied. So that's the anatomy of the Bloomberg Yield Table. The basic layout is the same, no matter what version of the yield table you use. As I said, it's full of valuable and useful information that can help you evaluate and understand a mortgage security and its underlying loans. Now, let's move beyond the basic layout. Bloomberg has four versions of the yield table for residential mortgage-backed securities available, so let's take a look at each of them. The first yield table that I want to talk about is the default yield table, or what's known as Bloomberg's YT screen, the letters YT. This is often the yield table that a broker will send to you in an email. The YT screen shows the yield of a mortgage-backed security based on the median street consensus prepayment speeds, which are expressed in PSA. The scenarios in this yield table show the yield and other info based on an unchanged interest rate environment and up and down 100, 200, and 300 basis points. As I mentioned back in episode 6 about prepayment risk, I'm not a huge fan of using PSA for prepayment analysis. There are two reasons for this. First, the consensus speeds are based on generic mortgage pool types and not specific to the security. In addition, while the PSA may be useful in some situations, I find it easier to analyze a mortgage security using a simpler constant prepayment speed like CPR and not a model containing a number of assumptions that may or may not be applicable. So the YT screen isn't one of my go-tos for mortgage securities. If this yield table is what you receive from your broker, there are other options that you can request. The second type of yield table is known as the Bloomberg YTR screen. This yield table shows yield scenarios based on CPR prepayment speeds, which is a constant speed. You can run whatever prepayment speed you want on this table. If you want to know what the security looks like at a speed of 6 CPR or 20 CPR or 70 CPR, the YTR screen makes it easy. I like this screen because it lets me run a number of what-if scenarios that I can base on recent prepayment speeds, as well as more extreme slow or fast speeds, so I understand how they might affect the mortgage pool. Okay, let's move on to yield table number 3, known as the Bloomberg YTH screen. The YTH screen is like the YTR screen in that it also presents scenarios based on CPR prepayment speeds. However, this yield table is based on the historical prepayment speeds for the specific mortgage security. As I mentioned earlier, at the very top of the yield table, we'll find prepayment speeds for the last month and the average speeds for the previous 3, 6, and 12 months, as well as the security's lifetime. These are the prepayment speeds that are used in the YTH screen, so you can quickly get a look at how this mortgage pool has behaved based on actual prepayment activity. When I'm looking at a seasoned mortgage security, I like to use a combination of the YTH and YTR screens. That way, I can see how the mortgage pool has behaved and look for any trends on the YTH screen while using the YTR screen for specific prepayment speed scenarios that are based on recent monthly speeds or the what-if types of scenarios that I mentioned before. Now, obviously, the YTH screen isn't going to help you with a newly issued mortgage-backed security since it doesn't have any history. But for mortgage securities that have already begun paying down, the YTH screen can be helpful. And finally, the fourth version of Bloomberg's yield table is based on Bloomberg's own prepayment model. Several years ago, Bloomberg acquired this model from Barclays. The model was renamed the Bloomberg Agency MBS Index Prepayment Model, which is a mouthful, otherwise known as the BAM model. The BAM model takes a more comprehensive look at the underlying loans that make up a given mortgage pool and their prepayment behavior. Something that makes the BAM model more helpful as well is that the model results are broken out by product types, such as 30-year, 15-year, adjustable rate, jumbo, and other loan programs. This means that the results are factoring in tighter parameters for each kind of residential mortgage. Bloomberg's model also considers borrower behavior based on things like collateral characteristics, interest rates, and the market environment. These include factors like the refinancing cycle, seasonality, the creditworthiness, home prices, occupancy type, and loan age. The YTBAM screen is similar to other yield tables in that the prepayment scenarios are based on rates unchanged, as well as plus or minus 100, 200, and 300 basis point shifts. The results are shown in CPR, with each prepayment assumption generated by the BAM model. In my experience, the BAM yield table is pretty good, and it's a nice complement to the other yield tables that we discussed before. It's not perfect, and sometimes I've found that it assumes prepayment speeds that are a little on the conservative side, but the programmers and analysts at Bloomberg have continued to find ways to tweak and improve the model. So that's an overview of the four Bloomberg yield tables. Which one is best? Well, I don't think there is one. They can all be helpful depending on what information an investor needs as they evaluate a mortgage-backed security. The key is knowing that they're available, how they differ, and how to use them in combination to analyze residential mortgage pools. We've covered a lot of territory today about yield tables, and hopefully your head isn't spinning too much. If you have any questions about the Bloomberg yield tables, please email me at chris@bondinvestmentmentor.com, and I'll do what I can to help you. By the way, I mentioned earlier that I'd created a free resource to help you better understand and navigate the Bloomberg yield tables. Let me tell you about that. The guide is called Understanding the Bloomberg Yield Table, and it will provide a written overview of all the information that we covered in today's episode. It contains an overview of the information contained on all of the Bloomberg yield tables, and it walks you through the differences between the four different yield table types. With this information, you'll have a better understanding of what info is available and how to locate it on the yield table. It'll make analyzing mortgage-backed securities quicker and easier. To download a free copy of the Bloomberg Yield Table Guide, head over to bondinvestmentmentor.com/yieldtables and we'll get you set up. That's bondinvestmentmentor.com/yieldtables with an S. And I'll leave a link to it in the episode notes. So thanks again for checking in. I hope that you found this information helpful. And if you know of someone that could benefit from this information as well, please take a moment to share this episode with them. Bond Investment Mentor is written and produced by me, Chris Nelson. The information, views, and opinions expressed during the podcast belong solely to myself, and any ideas and strategies contained within the podcast are for educational and informational purposes only and do not constitute investment, accounting, or legal advice. If you have any questions regarding anything that I covered today, or like the people that made the suggestion about yield tables, you have topics or ideas that you'd like me to cover, please email me at chris@bondinvestmentmentor.com and let me know. Also, if you haven't already, I'd like to invite you to follow the podcast so you don't miss an episode. You can subscribe on Apple, Spotify, any of the major platforms, or through whatever podcast app that you use. And if you do like what you hear, would you please consider leaving a rating or review? It does help others discover and learn more about the podcast. If you're looking for information about fixed income investing and portfolio management for community financial institutions, check out the website, bondinvestmentmentor.com. You'll find articles, tips, and resources to help you manage your institution's investment portfolio. And you can also learn more about the ways in which I can help you become better at what you do as a community banker and investment portfolio manager. And if you want to follow me on social media, you can catch up with me on LinkedIn at Christopher Nelson, CFA. I'd love to hear from you. Let's connect. I look forward to catching up with you again soon. Thanks for stopping by. Have a good one.